Hello, this is Denise Yon, and welcome to the Brand is Business Bites podcast. The Brand is Business Bites podcast gives you a taste of insights and information about brands, businesses, and the people who work on them. It's available on iTunes. For more stuff for your brain to chew on, please visit my website at deniseleeyon.com.
One of the brand building principles that distinguishes great brands is that great brands avoid selling products. In my book, What Great Brands Do, I discuss how great brands have learned that seducing people through emotions and developing relationships trumps pushing products on them. Another author has written a whole book exploring how brands cultivate emotional connections with customers. His name is Tim Halloran, and the book is called Romancing the Brand, How Brands Create Strong Intimate Relationships with Consumers. And he's here to talk with us today. Welcome, Tim.
Hi, Denise. Thanks for having me.
Tim, your book is filled with examples from powerful brands that consumers love, including Coke and Dos Equis and Smartwater, and it's based on your own work at Coke as well as work that you've done on many other brands. I'm going to ask you about several of these brand stories, but let's start first with why did you write this book?
Well, gosh, yes, you're right. I spent a lot of time at Coke. I spent over 10 years in the brand marketing group at Coca-Cola. And this was an idea that had been percolating in my mind for quite some time. It actually started when I was observing a focus group. And at Coca-Cola, we like to spend a lot of time with our consumers, really getting to know them very intimately. And so as a result, we spend a lot of time in focus groups talking to them. And this was just a run-of-the-mill focus group. I think it was on diet soft drinks at that point. And we were sitting there, and myself and a couple of associates were there, and a woman in the back, one of the respondents, picked up a can of Diet Coke, and she looked at it, and she said, you know, I drink 5 or 6 of these a day. It is always at my side. She said, I was drinking it. I had it at my side a month ago when I got my promotion at work, and it was there with me at my side 3 months ago when my cat died. It is there for me in good times. It's there for me in bad times. She's like, it's really a support vehicle for me. And then she said, and I'll always remember this line. I'll never forget it. She said, I like to think of Diet Coke sometimes as my boyfriend. And so naturally in the back room, there was a number there was some laughter and just some nervous laughter, kind of like what you just did, right? And people are like, what did she just say? And it struck with me, and I went and did a little more research on this and found out that there are marketing academics and psychologists that have done a lot of work that show that we as consumers actually have relationships with brands and actually think of them in a relational type of context. And some of the relationships are very surface level, right? I mean, we don't have a lot of feelings toward a brand. It's almost like maybe your relationship with your postman, right? They deliver you a service. You don't know a lot about them, but they do an okay job. But there are other brands where we have bordering on passionate feelings for, that if something happened to the brand or if it went away or it changed dramatically, we would feel a sense of loss. And I thought, wow, as marketers, if we could all get to that point where our consumer base is in love with our brands, that's really the most powerful relationship. And what do we need to do as marketers to get our consumers to fall in love with our brands?
So tell us about Dos Equis. We all know that Most Interesting Man campaign, but kind of pull back the curtain on that and tell us why that campaign has struck such a chord with people.
Yeah, it really is a great story and an interesting story. I spent some time with the Dos Equis brand team and the ad agency behind that campaign because it really was a very much a transformational campaign. The background is this, was that Heineken had acquired the rights to distribute and market Dos Equis, and they put a team behind it. And it kind of gets to one of my first principles of romancing the brand, that's the idea of knowing yourself. The idea of knowing yourself is that and you hear any of these relationship gurus, Dr. Phil or whoever, they'll all say, you know, you can't have a successful relationship with someone else unless you really kind of understand what you are at the core. And that's what this team went out and did, right? They went out and really figured out, well, what is Dos Equis all about? And they found that, you know, it was a small regional beer at the time. It was only available in four or five southwestern states. So it really had an open canvas, really, to kind of design and create this brand. And the brand itself, you know, at its fundamental level, it was actually born in Mexico, launched the two X's at the start of the 20th century. It was launched in 1898. That's what the two X's are for in the name, Dos Equis. But while it was born in Mexico, it was actually a German recipe. A German brewmaster had immigrated to Mexico with this recipe, and as a result, it didn't have a traditional Mexican beer kind of flavor. It was kind of mysterious, and it kind of had this unexpected flavor. And the brand team did some additional research and found that there was a lot of sales in the Austin, Texas area, right around the University of Texas. So they made this leap that thought, well, gosh, maybe there's something that is happening in spring break. These folks from UT are going down to Mexico, getting, you know, familiarizing themselves with this Mexican beer, and then when they come back to the United States, are buying it to kind of relive that spring break experience. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should go out and create a beer that links to spring break. Mexican beer that links to the whole spring break, the beaches, the babes, the bikinis.
Yes.
And then they thought, wait, someone else is kind of already doing that. There's a brand out there called Corona that kind of owns that.
Yes.
So then to make a long story short, they went in and did the second principle of what I call the romancing the brand model, and that's really knowing your type, knowing that consumer. And so they went out and spent night after night after night in bar after bar after bar. Not a bad gig, right? talking to these consumers to really understand what was the mindset behind what they were looking for in beer consumption. And what they found was really interesting, was they found that these guys really thought that a lot of the beer advertising kind of talked down to them. There was this frat boy kind of humor, right? You think about the guy shaking up the can and explodes on the girlfriend. And while they could appreciate that humor, it really didn't speak to them as much. Because what these guys were all about was they liked being in a group. They liked to be together in a group with the other guys, and it was so important for them to have a good story to tell. In fact, their biggest fear was a fear of being boring. And so this idea of being interesting and creating a badge that said, hey, I'm interesting, started to form in the brand team's mind. That the brand would not be positioned on a functional basis. It would be positioned more in an emotional context. That this would serve as a badge to tell others that they were interesting. But the functionality of the brand backed it up because of the unique and mysterious flavor that I was talking to you about earlier.
Wow. It strikes me that when you, in the research, learning that people wanted to be perceived as, or didn't want to be perceived as being boring, wanted to be perceived as interesting, that really shows how a brand can help someone express and even experience a desired identity. So that's fascinating.
Absolutely. Brands can be incredibly aspirational, and that's what these guys try to do. Someone always, you know, people always ask me, well, gosh, if they were really targeting that 20-something-year-old male beer drinker, if that was really their kind of hardcore influential consumer that they were looking for, why would they pick a 70-something-year-old grandfather type to be the most interesting man in the world, right? You think about that. Well, it was an aspirational play, right? It was, hey, if they had put someone like, I don't know, like a Jason Bourne type of character in that role, that, first of all, it would kind of make this guy who may be insecure about, gosh, maybe I'm not interesting enough. I need a good story to tell. And they saw this 20-something-year-old having all these interesting experiences. Well, that may kind of put me off. And then there was a believability factor, right? I mean, if I'm 20-something, I've had all these great, interesting experiences that this guy has had, the BS meter might go off. And as a result, this most interesting man in the world was an aspirational person. It was someone that guy who's 20-something could look forward to, and when they were in their 60s and 70s, have those kind of stories. And as a result, it became an incredible phenomenon. He was seen as very aspirational. The other thing that's kind of unique about the campaign is that at the end, if you know the ads, he says, I don't always drink beer, but when I do, I prefer Dos Equis. Now, think about that for a minute. Do any other brands or products ever give you an out? He doesn't always drink beer. So, in other words, the consumption message was trumped by the fact that if he drank beer all the time, he wouldn't be as interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea behind the man, most interesting man in the world, was they really built up that character at the expense of saying, I drink beer every single minute of the day, which would, again, not be authentic.
Right. You know, so it strikes me just in what you're describing is that there is, you know, really digging for consumer insights and really understanding what people value and how they see themselves and see the world, and then being willing to take some risks and do something that is a little bit unconventional and maybe, you know, sounds counterintuitive, but, you know, nonetheless, it can be very powerful. I think it's that combination that comes out to me in that story.
Tim,
I want to ask you. I want to ask you, what do you say to people who say, well, my brand is a technology solution, or I work on an industrial product? Getting someone to fall in love with my kind of brand seems pretty far-fetched. What is your response to that?
Sure, and I do get that question. What do I do if I'm in a B2B setting? What do I do if I have more of a functionally oriented brand? Well, I usually respond in two ways. Is number one, there are only so many functional benefits that a category can have, right? Otherwise, it's not that category anymore, right? It doesn't belong in that category.
Mm-hmm.
So what you end up doing is, if you only try to differentiate your brand on kind of functional benefits, is it quickly becomes a game of one-upsmanship, right? It's what can I do next? What can I do next? How do I kind of keep ahead of the game? And some companies can do that well. But the real magic is to try to differentiate in an emotional way. And I will tell you that even if you're in a B2B situation that involves a lot of sales, a lot of hand-holding, there's a connection there between that person on the front line who's talking to the buyer at an organization, and there's an emotional connection that needs to be made there. The person that's making that decision, that's making that, you know, that's deciding on which brand to purchase, has a decision to make, and their livelihood, their job could be on the line. So there is a way to kind of take the emotional connection there, even if it's a technology product or some product that's very functionally oriented, and create a connection. Is it as easy as a consumer-oriented brand? No, but I argue that it is still very essential.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, Tim, I want to thank you so much for sharing these thoughts and it really inspiring us with the great story of Dos Equis. For my listeners, I want you to know that you can learn more about the book at romancingthebrandbook.com, and you can learn more about Tim at timhalloran.com, and that's T-I-M. HALLORAN.com. I've learned a lot from reading your book, Tim, and I just want to wish you the best on the continued launch of it. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Denise. Really enjoyed it.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so your brain will always be filled with good stuff to chew on. For more information or to contact me directly, please visit my website at deniseleeyan.com. Take care and thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.